And we are live on the air
with Blog Talk Radio. We were already Facebook Live, so now we're live on both streams.
Tune in.
And once again, we have Dr. Tariq Farag. Am I saying that right?
Yes, that's okay. You can say Farag.
Okay. Farag. Farag. Okay.
Okay.
He was born in Egypt, received his PhD from the University of Alexandria, Egypt. He holds several patents in the nuclear industry that are all recognized worldwide. Tonight, we will be discussing the dangers of Islamic immigration, invasion, and conquest. Dr. Farag has appeared on numerous TV and radio shows. Let's welcome him to our show. So everybody, Facebook Live and Blog Talk Radio, welcome Dr. Farag. Thank you for joining us tonight. What an amazing list of accomplishments. Why don't we start off with a little bit about you. What was it like growing up, and where did you find your interest in the nuclear field?
Actually, it goes back to when I was in high school. And anyway, I loved to be helpful to not actually the country, the world. And they were talking about the damage of nuclear bombs and these things. So I was hoping that one day I can make full use in peaceful way to nuclear energy. And things helped me. And I went to engineering college. And from there, actually, it was just 1 year before I joined Alexandria University. They start a new study in nuclear engineering. So I was actually the second group to graduate from nuclear engineering. And since then, I worked in research and development of nuclear things. And I eventually migrated to the United States, and I've been here for almost 30 years. But the main reason I left my country was the bad situation there. It's a torn country.
Egypt is the home of Hassan al-Banna. Yeah, and birthplace of the Muslim Brotherhood. What do you know about this organization and its founders?
Okay. This is the main thing, actually, that bothers me now. The Muslim Brotherhood, it's simply a terrorist organization. But if you look at Egypt, because Egypt, the most the population is about maybe 80% of the population is Muslim. And the problem people face is actually in foreign countries, they don't know anything about the real Islam. So if you would let me start talking about this subject, and the Muslim Brotherhood will be part of it, but I am trying to focus on teaching people the real Islam. Would this be okay with you?
Yeah, go right ahead. The floor is yours.
Okay, so let us start with one thing first. Because we keep hearing that Islam is a religion of peace, there is no discrimination and such things. Let us start with our constitution and things like this. What is the freedom of religion as defined in our constitution, or in any society that applies the high human standard? Freedom of religion is not limited to someone praying in his home to his God, and that's it. Freedom of religion is, in reality, it's like freedom of expression. It means your ability to analyze, criticize other religions and join these religions or reject them in a peaceful way. Remember, peaceful manner. But if you look at Islam, once you join Islam, first of all, you cannot leave Islam. You must be killed. If you try to criticize Islam or analyze it in a logical manner, you are going to be killed. So how come people say that Islam is a religion of peace and freedom of honor, freedom of religion? If you want to know exactly what a religion is, you need to go to its main sources, the real sources of this religion, study them. In addition, you need to look at the societies where these religions are majority. So if we go to societies like countries like Egypt, Pakistan, Afghanistan, this is even Iran, Saudi Arabia, I don't want to keep naming them. But look at any of these countries that the majority there are Muslims. You'll be shocked. How come they are saying that these are peaceful, is this a peaceful religion? And there is no discrimination. All these things. And what we see now in ISIS and those terrorists, it's a reflection of exactly what is the teachings of Islam. And I'm going to touch this right away. But even if you look at Islam itself, like look at Sunni Muslims and the Shia Muslims, do you see peace between them? I never heard about a Christian going to a mosque where there are 2,000 or 5,000 people praying and explode himself from both sides. So even Islam within itself, it's very violent religion. You can never say that this is a peaceful act, that what we see in Iraq, that someone from the Sunni Muslim go inside a mosque and explode himself, kill 200 people and injure 400. Do you think this is a peaceful thing to do?
No,
I need people to answer this question. So this is the first thing. But now let us go. So the application of Islam in these Islamic countries does not reflect what people are saying. I don't think this is a peaceful way of living in this country. So I'm not going to discuss this anymore. I think everyone see it. But let us go to the now, to the main teachings of the religion. Islam teaching is actually the main source of it is the Quran, which Muslims consider it to be the holy book coming from God. So this is number one source in Islamic teachings. Number two is the seerah. Seerah means the biography of Muhammad, the Prophet Muhammad, what he said, what he was doing, how he judged things like this. And concluding from these two sources, they came with another one, which is Sharia law. So now let us examine some of the teachings of Islam as represented by the acts of the Prophet Muhammad. At the beginning of the Prophet Muhammad's message to people, a lot of people didn't believe in him, and actually they felt that he's not a prophet, or I don't want to say frankly, but let us assume that they didn't agree with his opinion, so they criticized him, and some of them wrote poems criticizing him. So his reaction was to send his army to kill them. And one of these was a very old, very well-respected woman in her tribe. She was called Qirfa. So to kill her, She's a very old woman, highly respected in her tribe. So they tied her two legs between two camels and the split hair made the two camels move in two directions. So they killed her this savage way. I think this, you can add this to ask yourself the question, is this a religion of peace? Is this a tolerant religion? If someone criticizes or not. So these, when I'm telling you these, are coming actually from Islamic sources. Nothing more than Islamic sources. So this is one story. It shows when someone criticizes Islam, what the punishment should be. Now we go to another story. It's a well-known story. It's named the story of Al-Bagliyin. These were eight men in the desert. They came to Muhammad's camp. They needed help, shelter, food, something like this. So Muhammad said, no, I can't shelter you. You must be Muslim before I can shelter you. So they said, okay, we are going to be Muslim. Then he ordered them to drink the urine of camel and the milk of camel to heal them. So the milk of camel, actually, he considered this as a miraculous medicine, and the milk of camel to feed them. So they didn't spend even one night. Before the dawn come, before the start of the next day, they woke up early, decided that they are not going to follow this religion, and they decided to escape. So each one of them took a camel. They killed the slave that was guarding the camel and escaped with these eight camels. So Muhammad, when he woke up, his people woke up in the morning, they found the slave was killed, eight camels disappeared. So he sent his people after them. They brought them back to him. So Muhammad by himself cut off the two hands, 2 feet, and they gouged the 2 eyes of every one of these eight men by himself as a punishment. Why this punishment? This punishment because they converted from Islam, not because they stole the camel. Because if you steal a camel, the punishment is to cut one hand. But in this case, actually, they didn't steal them. He was able to get these camels back. So there shouldn't be such a severe punishment. And also, the sources doesn't mention how these people came to Muhammad's camp. Were they walking, which is almost impossible? Were they having their horses, their camels? Because this is what was going on. When someone joined Muhammad, he's joining the jihad, which means Muhammad is going to take whatever they have and give them their gear of war, like give them camels or horses, swords, and things like this. So even I'm assuming that they didn't have anything. They came walking and they stole these camels. So the punishment of stealing camel, he should have cut one hand only of each of these men, not the 2 hands, the 2 feet, and the gouging, the 2 eyes. I don't agree that this is a peaceful action or this is a peaceful punishment to punish someone converting from certain religion. And I give you another fact about another story. This story is more serious than the one I just mentioned. It's known about the tribe of Bani Qurayza. Bani Qurayza were terrified when Muhammad migrated from Mecca to Al-Madinah. People were escaping. When they hear his people are coming, they escape, they leave their camels, their sheep, and they ran to the mountains. So this tribe asked Muhammad, what is going on? We were living in peace. He said, okay, I can have a peace treaty with you. And really, they signed maybe one of the first written peace treaties with them. So Muhammad wanted to go and attack other tribes. So he asked them to join him in attacking other people. So they said, no, our agreement is we are going to defend El Medina only, if someone is attacking us, but not to go with you, attack other people. So he was angry anyway. He went attacking the other people and became, during his absence, some messengers came from other tribes telling the tribe of Bani Qurayza, now it's our time. This guy is terrifying us. We must get rid of him right now before he comes back. But the tribe of Bani Qurayza eventually refused. They said, no, we have an agreement with him. Up till now, he didn't do anything against the agreement, and we must abide by this agreement. So they refused to help them. But when Muhammad came back, he was having his spies, and he knew that this was going on, but the people refused. So he considered that this is a violation of the agreement. So eventually what happened, he killed, anyway, he seized the whole tribe, and eventually they surrendered to him, hoping that one of them will mediate to see if they should be punished or not. But this mediator was actually a Jewish one. By the way, Bani Qurayza was a Jewish tribe. So they saw that because this is a Jewish guy, he'll be fair to them because they didn't do anything wrong. Instead, their punishment was to kill all the men in the tribe, take their women and the children as slaves and the spoils of war, take all their properties, their money, their homes, their lands, their fields, whatever they have became to the Muslim. So Muhammad ordered as the digging of a trench, and they brought people to the trench one by one. Each man was tied on his back, his hands are tied, and escorted by two guards, till they come to the trench. Then Muhammad by himself cut his head, threw the head in the trench and the body. He did this by himself. The Islamic sources estimates the number to be between 600 to 800 men, and another source estimates them to be 800 to 1,000. So these are the teachings of Islam. I don't know if some people knowing these facts will say that this is really a peaceful religion, it's a tolerant religion. So can you tell me about a peaceful thing or a peaceful teaching of Islam, you know about it?
No, not at all. I actually haven't heard anything peaceful from it in all the years that we've been dealing with it. And my co-host here, Frank, have been on the front lines for a while. We were one of the first people around here that opened up the how they had started making free speech zones, to where you couldn't talk about certain people unless you were in a free speech zone.
Okay, so there are also, if you are talking about the actions of Muhammad, because some Muslim will tell you, no, we don't take this as a mandatory thing. We only take the Quran. I can tell you the Quran is very simply calling for the killing of all non-Muslims.
Yes.
At the beginning of Islam, Quran was talking about the Jewish people and the Christians as the people of the book. We should respect them. We should treat them very well as if they are our own Muslims. But later, he turned completely against them and said that whoever takes Christian or whoever takes a Jewish person as a friend, he's one of them, and he is doomed, or he should be killed. And eventually,
right,
he said that the people, everyone that's non-Muslim, must be killed. And to express this in Sharia law, I can give you example of what is called in Sharia law the diyah. Diya, remember this word, Diya is an Arabic word meaning the civil compensation you pay for someone that was killed by mistake or an accident. So if you kill a Muslim man, you pay it at 100%. This well established amount, like how many camels, how many pieces of gold. So let us say if you kill by accident a Muslim man, free Muslim man. It must be free Muslim man. It's 100%. Let us take this amount, how many camels, whatever camels, as 100%. If the person that you killed was a free Muslim woman, you pay the diya at 50%. If the one that was killed, a Jewish or Christian man, you pay it at 30%. If it was a Jewish or Christian woman, you pay it at 15%. If the person that was killed was a Muslim capable of jihad and he didn't join jihad, then his diya is 0% because he must be killed anyway. If this person killed was an atheist or Buddhist or any other religion other than Christianity and Judaism, his diya is 0% because according to Sharia law, you must be killed. You see how Islam is equating between everyone, women and men, no discrimination. Do you think so?
No, not at all. No, definitely not. So, they don't care. They just like send children strapped with bombs into places, or send children at army soldiers hoping that they get shot just so they can use it as some sort of martyring.
Okay, I have actually, I'm associating myself with the author. His name is Abu al-Ha'ani. He wrote a book, very good, I can say, scientific book, in a technical way, academic way. The title of the book is Can Trump Defeat Hillary, Obama, Islamic Terror, Prostituted Media, and Political Prostitution. This book has a very good section explaining Islam's teaching, the real Islam's teaching. And it's documented. If you want me to repeat this book, I can repeat the name. And there is another book.
Go ahead and tell people where to find that book.
This book is sold on Amazon. And there is one point here. Amazon, actually, I noticed they hide the material that they consider them offending to Islam. But I can repeat the book again. It's Can Trump Defeat Hillary, Obama, Islamic Terror, Prostituted Media, and Political Prostitution. I think the title is clear. And there is another book, actually, by another Muslim scholar, his professor, Dr. Hamid Abdel Samad. The title of this book is Islamic Fascism. These are two very important books. They explain the teachings of Islam, the real teachings of Islam. Especially these two people are Muslims. It seems that at least they studied Islam very well, and they are very fluent in the Arabic language. If you compare it to other people that are writing about Islam, criticizing it, they criticize it from their knowledge, from a translation, or hardly can, not are very fluent in the Arabic language. They use translations, or they are not well exposed to all the material that discusses Islam. So, since I mentioned this, let us discuss something else, which is the United States Constitution. United States Constitution guarantees the freedom of religion and the freedom of expression or ideas or speech. These are guaranteed by our Constitution. But it's guaranteed only for peaceful expression. But if we look at Islam, when we look at Islam, Islam by itself is not defined as a religion. Islam is a total system, because the definition of a religion, it is something private between a person and his God, and you can practice it with other people, but it has to be peaceful. Islam doesn't go this way. Islam is considered a full system to live under it, which is not a religion as it is an ideology. So if we look at Islam, should we protect Islam as a religion under United States Constitution? The answer will be no. Why? Because Islam as a religion is a very violent religion. It doesn't accept freedom of speech or freedom of religion. So we cannot consider this a religion that we can protect. And adding to this, not because you said this is a religion, it's automatically protected under our Constitution. No, our Constitution guarantees only the freedom of peaceful religion. And not every teaching of this religion is acceptable because it's, you call it religion. And everyone knows the Mormons here in the United States, they cannot do whatever they're teaching. They are not free to do whatever they're teaching that contradicts the Constitution, like having more than one wife, their internal affairs in their religion. So it's not acceptable. And even, for example, another example, if your religion is to sacrifice humans, it's not acceptable also. You cannot say the United States Constitution protects this freedom of religion. So from this, we can conclude that Islam cannot be protected under our United States Constitution as a religion. But let us look now as an idea, an ideology now, because this is a system of life. Now look at it as a system of life. You cannot also guarantee the protection of Islam ideology because it's very violent. And it doesn't match or it contradicts completely our Constitution, because our Constitution equates everyone, not only women, but Christians, Muslims, Jewish people. This is what we have, no discrimination. But Islam is not only discriminating against other religions, it makes it criminal that you must kill. So Islam as a religion or ideology is not protected by our Constitution because it's violence. And its teaching is against our Constitution.
Yes,
Do you have any comment before I continue?
No, I mean, I completely agree with you. I think both of us do, right?
Yeah, we've been part of the counter-jihad since 2001, since it hit home here with the 9/11 attacks. But we've been down Dearborn, where there's a high concentration of Islam. We've been hit with water bottles full of urine. Shoes have been thrown at us. Just on a peaceful protest down in Dearborn, about just asking them a few questions about their proceedings and things that were going on there with the Sharia being implemented and whatnot. And it turned ugly fast.
Yeah, they had a counter protest that came down, and they were shouting racial slurs at us and obscenities and calling us Jim Crow. And I mean, it was ridiculous, you know, and we weren't even there as really a protest like that. We sat there, we had a table with some information on it and the Palestinian Wall of Lies behind us. And, you know, we was just trying to take some conversation.
I tell you something. Again, the best way to know the teaching of a religion or to know and understand a religion, to see how it is applied. I'm going to draw your attention to something very simple. First of all, I'm not here trying to attack Muslims. Absolutely not. The problem is not in Muslims as a human being like me and you. The problem is in the teachings of Islam. The problem in Islam itself, not Muslims. Muslims, I consider them victims. But let us look now the impact of being raised as a Muslim. Look at what happened in France when these, we can call them terrorists, to call them whatever you call them, that assassinated these cartoonists. As a reaction, about 200,000 Muslims demonstrated and signed a petition not to condemn this killing, but to condemn the insults to Islam. You see now, when you are talking about there are peaceful Muslims, 200,000, none of them came to say that this is a terrorist act, it's not Islam. Instead, this in England, I think, signed 200,000. But you remember what happened in Pakistan, in Iran, in all these Islamic countries, the demonstration against insulting Islam. So this gives you another example. Now, if you look at the recent incident, and this is something actually I would like to talk about more generally, which is the infiltration of Islamic terror. I'm not going to say Islam. Islamic terror in our country. It is promoted by a criminal. I can say, and all the time I say, he is a criminal. His name is Obama. And I consider him Islamic terrorist. So if you look at this guy, he apparently paralyzed our intelligence system in a way to allow these Islamic terrorists all over the country. If you start, for example, by the Boston Marathon massacre, the FBI and the CIA were informed about these two brothers, and they are radical and they are terrorists. But no one took the correct action to prevent them. Next one, in San Bernardino, they were everyone, and next in Florida, and now in Ohio. Do you know what is the funny name they say about these terrorists? They should say they are self-radicalized. Self-radicalized, if you just listen to the word self-radicalized, it tells you something, that no one else came and tell him that this is what you should do. How you can be self-radicalized except when you read your religion? So this is exactly what they concluded. From learning their religion, they realized that what they should be doing is to do this, what we call it, act of terrorism. And this is a very good word for Obama to keep repeating it. It's a deception when you say self-radicalized. It's a testimony from this terrorist, Obama, that these guys are terrorized by learning the religion. not by going to ISIS, joining them and coming back. So we need to use the correct expression. So this is, again, this word radicalized, self-radicalized, it explains everything, that these people, they don't need to go to ISIS or join them. They can learn the religion, and this is what you conclude from this. So do you have any other comments before we continue?
No, I mean, you're covering it really well. I had a list of questions, but you seem to be nailing them right down the line as I had them. So, I mean, continue. You're doing a good job.
Okay, then let me talk about the reality in a moderate Islamic country, which is my original country, Egypt. I can give you unlimited stories. These are well documented even in the State Department. Our government documented the persecution of the Christians in Egypt. But I'm going to tell you two stories, because these stories happened recently after El-Sisi became a president. And he's calling for people to be like, whatever you call it, be forgiving or be peaceful, change these terrorist ideas in our Islam and things like this. But this is impossible. Calling for is impossible. And lately, in a city, I think Elmenia, there were people trying to, by the way, it's forbidden in Egypt to build a church. They put all obstacles to build the church. And if you want to build a church, it's considered so ridiculously dangerous to the security of the nation that you need to get approval from all authorities, from the police department, from national security, and eventually the president has to sign on this permit to build or repair a church. So anyway, those people, there were a people living, a group of people, I think about 5 or 7 families in this village, and they were threatened. People want to expel them out of the city because they are Christians and most of the village are Muslim. So they got threats. So they called the police and told the police that we have these people threatening to come and kill us or do harm to us and our property on the coming Friday at 8:30 or 8 in the evening. So they ignored them and said, no, this will not happen. So one day before this happened, they went and filed a police report in the main station, not this time in the local station. They got the same answer. No, there is nothing. They gave them the name and told them it's after Friday prayer, people will come and do this to us. They said, no, nothing will happen. But actually, when they reported this the first time, the police came to search their home, search this Christian home, to make sure that they don't have arms to protect themselves if they were attacked. So the next time, they went to the main station, nothing happened. And for sure enough, a mob of about 500 Muslims came armed with machine guns, pistols, machetes, even having with them gasoline tanks, firearms, every kind of weapon, sticks, heavy sticks, and they set fire on the 5 homes or 7 homes, looted the home of these people, of these families, set them on fire, and stripped the naked. An elderly woman, her age I think is about 70 years old, they paraded her in the street. And after this, they reported this attack to the authorities. The fire department didn't respond. The police didn't respond. They came after this happened, 2 hours after they finished. Then the authorities were trying to, because now with this Facebook, the news about this attack spread very quickly. So the governor said, no, there is nothing, and asked the media not to report about it, not to exaggerate things. This is normal. Yes, it is normal for Christians every day, their homes, their churches to be burned, they be attacked, killed, and nothing will happen. No one is arrested. So this time, the spread of the news made the church move to ask for something must be done. Enough is enough. So finally, with pressure, not from the president didn't move. He said all what he said, this is nothing, this is lies, nothing like this can happen. And if something like this happened, the perpetrator should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. But eventually, nothing happened. But under the pressure, the police department moved. Do you know how many they arrested out of these 500? I tell you, they arrested 6 only. 5 of them are Christian, and 1 only Muslim. You see, they are arresting the victims. 5 victims, they arrested them with 1 Muslim. So the Christians were so mad, and there was a threat that they are going to demonstrate very harshly. Then the police issued an arrest warrant for additional, I think, 5 people. One of them was a year dead, and the other one is paralyzed on a wheelchair. So this gives you an idea about how the country is tolerant to Christians. And just on the 25th of this month, another incident like this happened. At a village, I think its name is El Ghamamish. This village, they were trying to get a permit to build a church. The authority refused. So they have a home or a big place they used to gather there. So there was a rumor in the village that the Christians are planning to convert this place into church, and they are going to pray in this place. It's a private place. It's not a public place. So, again, the same story happened. I'm talking about here the 25th of November. So, as the same thing, a mob of about 300 to 1,000 people came, set the whole place on fire, looted the stores and the homes around this area. The same story. The president doesn't feel he's responsible for these things. It's normal. It's a peaceful country. No discrimination. Adding to this, there was a woman. She was actually a teacher, a good teacher, but she's a Christian. So a student, a young student, age, I think, 10 or 12, something like this, they said that she insulted Islam. How she insulted Islam, she didn't say, like, the Prophet Muhammad. She said something like Muhammad. Instead of saying the Prophet Muhammad, she said Muhammad. So they consider this an insult. Even the principal and all the witnesses said that this never happened. Still, the court ordered her to pay very hefty punishment. I think like $100,000 or something, very close to this amount, and imprisonment for a couple of years. On the other side, you look at there were 27 terrorists of the Muslim Brotherhood indicted and sentenced to imprisonment for different periods of time, 27 of them. But El-Sisi, the president, forgave them and released them from the prison. You see, no discrimination, I think. Do you think this is discrimination?
Right. Yeah, terrorist. I mean, it's not really discrimination.
Indicted.
No, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I don't understand.
Someone comes to me and say this is a religion of peace.
Right. Right. Yeah, they say one thing and do another, though, you know. You hear them say peace, but all they push off is war and violence and, you know. It's,
and even when
I mean,
they
we've
say
had a roundtable discussion in Dearborn with some of the imams down there. They asked why I was so worried about the implementation of Sharia law in America when Sharia, he said, was not even practiced in Saudi Arabia. So, and this is in front of cameras and everything, and so the lies just come out, and it's not even a problem.
No, because it says right in the Quran to lie to all non-believers.
Yes. So, if this is, I think this gave you a good idea, but if you actually let me talk about something I feel very important to our country. Which is healthcare. Would you mind if I talk a little bit about it?
No, I'd love if you talked about healthcare. It'd be awesome.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, sure.
I actually wrote a small book about healthcare. Its title is Trump, the only one that can adopt this best healthcare plan. I think I have terrific ideas. Let us, at the beginning, see what is the philosophy of this healthcare plan. In my point of view, healthcare is not a luxury item. It's a human right. Do you agree or disagree?
Yes, I agree very much.
You agree very much? Why?
Yes.
Because this is a natural thing. In a society, I don't want to see my neighbor across the street from me is dying because he cannot afford to have certain medication. And this is
right,
a duty
exactly.
on the whole society.
No, I think everybody should
now.
Be... And a lot of things, the way it's ran, you know, a lot of things that are out of reach for people in our situation differs from the reach of people, say, like Rothschilds, who can, you know, who was it that had like his seventh heart? Yeah, he just, you know, and we have people that are waiting on lists that just die, but he can go through seven different
okay.
hearts or something
so
like that, you know.
I think now we can all agree on this point that healthcare is something, a human thing. It's a right for citizens to have it, irrespective if you are rich or poor, disabled or not. This is a human right. Now, this is the other point. You have to have a minimum. We have to have a minimum applied to everyone in the country irrespective of his financial situation. Number two, the expenses you are expending on health care is not a luxury thing. It must be deducted fully from your tax return irrespective of this stupid thing that they call you have to exceed 7.5% of your income and you have to itemize. No, you must deduct this amount from as an expense from your income. Okay? Now we
okay,
come to
yeah.
another point. It should be like the money that you spend on this health care, it should be equally distributed on all citizens. Like, let us say we find healthcare tax should be, for example, 20%. Then if you are making $1,000 a year, you're going to pay $200. I'm making $1 million a year, then I pay maybe $200,000. The situation now is rich people who have rich companies, they pay share less than other people. It depends on your job. So if you are making in your job $80,000, or let us say $100,000, you might be paying, let us say, $500 a month, and your company is paying another $500 for a family coverage. While another employee whose income is $40,000 only might be paying the same amount. So you see now how I'm going to fund the health care plan. Are you following?
Yeah, hello? Yeah, definitely. I'm understanding what you're getting at there. I mean, it makes
okay.
complete sense.
Okay, because the main thing, if we agree on these principles, everything will be easy. So next to this one, now we are talking about, this is a human right. The expenses are not luxury. Everyone should pay a certain percentage of his income to finance the system. I'm paying for you, and you are paying for other people, and this is the society. And if you are not trying actually to use religion, I avoid in all my discussion talking about religion, but if you are a Christian, you can say that this is a real principle in Christianity. But now we come to the most important point. Now, for the... Sorry. We said the first one is the human rights, tax deduction. Now, if we look at the current system, let me just switch a little bit to the current system. The current system is built on healthcare companies or health insurance companies. All what they do is what? Nothing. They don't provide any service. Actually, they cut the service. You see, the job is a broker. They take money from me and the money from my employer, and instead of me going to my doctor and paying, they go and pay the doctor, and they deduct from themselves some good amount of money to cover their expenses and to give them some profit. The measure for health insurance companies in general, their success is measured by the profit they make, not by the service they provide. You see the point here? The measure of
yes.
success of health... Sorry?
I said yes. Yes, I see.
Okay. Now, if you want to reduce the cost of your health care system, what you should do? There is two things very simple. To reduce the health, you need to eliminate the expenses, unneeded expenses. So this is why I don't need health insurance company. And luckily, we have the Medicaid system. It's an electronic system, well established. It pays the doctors according to certain way. So I don't need to develop a new system for this health care insurance. Like what happened in Obamacare, they were trying to build a website, and this website failed, crashed, and they have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars to fix the system. But I'm already having the Medicaid system. So this is the way it should go. The Medicaid here is not going to act like health care company, no. It's going to act as someone who's collecting money, like money management. Collect money, pay the service provider like hospitals, doctors, things like this. So this is a very good, important step. You are going to save the money wasted on health insurance company. Now, the most important element in reducing the cost, this is something for hundreds of years are known. It is the supply and the demand. If you want to reduce the cost, then increase the supply to exceed or meet the demand. Very simply, if you apply this logic, look at the system we have now for healthcare, you'll see it's a broken. Why? Healthcare providers are very not enough. Now, you see the doctor, for example, your family doctor, he works from like 8 in the morning till maybe 8 in the evening. And if he's a surgeon, and I know surgeons, he was waking up like 4:30 in the morning doing some exercise and then go to the hospital to do his operations from 5 in the morning to 12. He goes to his office from 12 to 6 in the evening. He spends 2 additional hours from 6 to 8 examining the records and making instructions to the nurses. And then he goes home after 10. This is a killing. And so the point here is that the healthcare providers are less than what we need. But if we increase this number, then their fee will go down. How to increase them? I'm not asking to like reduce the level of the practitioner. But on the same time, increase the number, make the study easier. I can give you an example of this study, how it is not, the system is broken also. I noticed that the ultrasonic technician, after 2 years of training, taking classes for 2 years, he can start making $80,000, something between $60,000 to $80,000 a year. So I said, that's good. Let my son join them instead of going to medical school for 7 years and the training, blah, blah, blah. So it's good investment. But what I was shocked to notice, you have to study certain number of classes, like 6 subjects in one semester, and the next semester another 6. Then I asked them, can he study 2 classes? And when he graduates, studies another 2 classes till he finishes these 6 classes within a year or 2, because he needs to work while he's studying. This is no. He must study all these classes in those 2 semesters, and he must graduate in these 2 years, which make it extremely almost impossible for someone who's trying to do this. So the way to do this is to let more people go into this field, train them well, provide them with a system that allows them to build their skills and be rewarded at the end in a way you can encourage them to come to this field. So this is number one, how to increase service providers, and this will reduce the cost for sure. I noticed, for example, here in Illinois, dentists, the number of dentists increased too much. So they are competing with each other and reducing the cost. Someone, like say, for example, making the crown for $1,200, then I can find another one in the area charging like $700. This is the way, actually, the only way to reduce the cost is to increase the supply. So there is another element of this healthcare plan, which is medication. This is a scam. The medication, the medicine, the way it is treated, it's a very bad system, corrupt system. Even if you look, the government is subsidizing the research for new drugs. They provide universities, research centers, pharmaceutical companies with money to develop these medications. Once they come with these medications, they can put the price they want, no control. So this is another point. We need to fix this system of pharmaceutical companies.
Are all right, well, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dr. Tariq Ra.
Detroit Rock City Promotions, everything you need for your party, wedding, show, or event. DJ services, tent setups, table and chairs, mobile stages, sound and lighting, photography, on-staff reverend. Book DRCP Army today at 810-627-9773. That number again is 810-627-9773. Or find us on the web at DetroitRockCityPromotions.com. RadioAFS.com.
Warning. Warning. Warning.
Hey, Bob, you almost, boy, you almost about to make me take my motherfucking chains off on this shit you talk.
Nah, fuck you. Fuck you, dude.
That's what that's.
Motherfucking, hey, who was
it? I'm the king and I'll make.
Fantasy football offered you a bet, and you said, well, my chains ain't real good. You got to give me the first 4 weeks of the season.
Tune in to the Fallout Shelter, radioactive trash talk with your host, A-Bomb, and the Oakland Knight, Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 p.m. Eastern.
The water in Flint, Michigan is making people sick. You want to help? Flint Stock Productions needs your assistance. Flint Stock Productions is a nonprofit organizing several events that help children affected by the water crisis in Flint. The funding assists doctor and medical costs not covered by insurance and also replaces contaminated appliances of Flint residents. Flint Stock 2016 is dedicated to maintaining clean water in their community. Visit FlintStock2016.com. Again, that's FlintStock2016.com.
And we're back. I am your host, Reverend Worm. As always with me is my co-host, Frank Wap.
How you doing?
And our special guest today is Dr. Tariq Farag, and he is, well, quite an amazing guest, nuclear physicist, engineer, something. Yeah, engineer, and one of the foremost experts on immigration. It's been a good talk so far. We're past our time, but if you got some more you'd like to say, I mean, you can keep going if you'd like.
Okay. Let me finish this healthcare very quickly. So again, the measure of success for pharmaceutical companies is the same, which is profit. So now, to solve the problem of the cost of medication, the government should go into this field by working with universities, establishing research centers to develop new medication. And when they hire people for these centers, I don't want them to hire lazy government worker that will get this money and do nothing. If, for example, there is a PhD researcher working in pharmaceutical companies making $120,000 a year, then the government should hire them at less, much less, maybe 100 or 80,000 a year. But on the same time, can give them royalty for the drugs they make. And I give example, if you have a drug for cancer treatment, for example, that you need 30 bills for each month, now a drug like this could be sold in the market for $500, $1,000. But if the government is selling it for something around $100, each bill like $3 or even $2, or let us say $1 even, then the cost, because the cost of manufacturing the drug is almost nothing. It's just the packaging. The packaging is the most expensive part in the drug manufacturing. So you are talking about a bill that costs maybe 5 cents. And even if you sell it at $1, you are making very good profit. In addition to this $1, if you take 5 cents from this as a royalty to this researcher, selling, for example, 100 million of these a year, 0.5% means 5 million a year or 500,000. So you can increase the salary of these people to encourage them. So this is mainly the thing. And there is another issue with the pharmaceutical, which is the patent. Because when you are having a patent for certain drug, you'll stop anyone from manufacturing it. And the system of patenting is very bad. It encourages the stealing of patents because, you know, it's a big subject. But anyway, the patent system should change also. And so going out of this, when we talk about immigration, because I'm trying to wrap up my conversation with you, because I think that I passed my time. But let us go back to what you said, the immigration. I am originally from Egypt, migrated here. In order for me to bring my family, I have to wait 5 years till I get my citizenship. And once I get my citizenship, I file the paper, for example, for my sister-in-law to come to the United States as an immigrant. They had to wait 15 years till their turn came. And at that time, their children, the ones that was 3 or 4 or 5, they passed the age of 18. So the family cannot migrate as one family. And even if you consider when I applied for them, they were at the age of 35, 40. Now they are at 55 or 50. How come someone migrate from his country now at age of 55 to start a new life? This is almost impossible. Compare this now. Why they took this 15 years? Because the country is saturated with illegal immigrants. It cannot get more immigrants now. So this is why they extend the term to come. Now these people that are here illegal, stealing my family's right to come, they complain, how come after we've been here for 15 years illegal, you want to separate our families? What logic is that? And on the same time, if we have, because people are criticizing Trump when he said he's going to deport these people. Look at, if we have a comprehensive migration system, the turn should not come after 15 years. It should come after 4 or 5 years. So even for the illegal immigrants, because they migrated here illegally, they are subjected to abuse, to being under fear, all kinds of bad things, and they accept to work below the standard of living and all these bad things. But if they know that they are coming here legally after 4 years or 5 years, I'm sure that they prefer to wait for their turn and to come here as a full citizen to work as American people. So when we talk about these illegal immigrants, we must deport them. This is for the benefit of the legal, for the benefit of these illegals themselves.
Yeah, so, I mean, the immigration system is just like pretty much every governmental system that we have in place. It's set up to fail. You know, none of it works correctly. Like Frank just said, it's broken. We have gotten to the point to where, unless you have a certain amount of money to push things ahead faster than the normal person, you know, exactly.
I tell you, actually, the failure is our president, the reason for this failure. For Obama, for example, to erase our laws and give an executive order to give this amnesty, this again is the law. So this is the way you encourage illegals to come, hoping for someone like this will do this thing. And someone talking legally like Trump, people say, no, he's wrong. Now the one who's saying the right thing and the truth, we call him wrong. And the opposite.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think now I abused my time. I let you decide. Okay, so.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed having you on the show. You had a lot of good things to say. You're very knowledgeable about Islam and also on the healthcare front. You're also very knowledgeable. And I think a lot of things that you said are actually a national package that I could actually get behind.
And like he said himself, he is an immigrant that came here legally, went through, jumped through all his hoops, and now he's trying to jump through the hoops right. And, you know, I think it's kind of messed up for certain people to say that the immigrants who just came in here illegally and just didn't care about going through those certain things shouldn't be held above Mr. Farag here, who had just, he actually went through the hoops and, you know, he did what he had to become a citizen.
So, okay.
Yeah, definitely.
I hope that I can have opportunity to talk about other subjects.
Would like to have you to come back on the show in the future so we can continue on with some other topics also.
You know, I tell you honestly, I am one of the strongest supporters of Trump, and I can convince anyone of anything that Trump said that it was correct, including his criticism to McCain and saying that he's not a hero. A lot of things I can talk to you about, but I give you this opportunity. If you decided, I am at your disposal at any time. Just let me know.
Well, we really, really appreciate that. I mean, it means a lot to us at the Wormhole that you came and the subjects that you talked about. And we'd like to have you back for in the future to keep us updated. You know, if you come up with something that you really need to, you want to get on the show immediately, just get a hold of me or Frank and we'll get you on. And, if you just want to call for 10 minutes or 15 minutes, you have the number here to the station. So you just, anytime the show's going, if you want to call in and talk to us, call in and talk to us. It don't even have to be planned, you know?
Okay, great. I really appreciate this. And I wish you the best of luck. And God bless you.
You too, Doctor. Thanks again for talking with us. And we will be sure to speak to you soon in the future.
Okay. Take care now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And that's Dr. Tariq Farag. Great guest.
Yeah.
Great guest.
Yeah, amazing. That was really, man, what a smart guy, huh?
Very knowledgeable. On a full spectrum.
I'm afraid to just talk because I'm such an idiot already. Yeah. You put me next to a nuclear engineer and, you know, I might as well have a puppet on my hand going,
yeah,
look at me, laugh at me because I'm a fucking idiot. Because that's what I do.
Well, still. Okay, we have another caller coming in right now.
We have a caller.
Oh. Yeah, you are live on the air with the Wormhole. May I ask who's calling?
Well, if you're going to have a nuclear doctor on, you may as well have an A-bomb call.
Lord. Charlton. Charlton is now called into the show.
What's up, Lawrence? How's it going, man?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Come on, man. You got to use my brand name, man. It's, you know, it's the brand. It's AFS.
Today, obviously, with this is the A-bomb from Radio AFS's own Fallout Shelter.
You can catch them on Tuesday nights, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, 9:30 Eastern.
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 Thank you.
Eastern. What's happening, A-bomb? What do you think of Dr.
Well, I love him. I absolutely love him. Dr. Farah is the kind of immigrant our country needs, educated, skilled, dedicated. I want to touch on that. I live in Stockton, California, a county or a city in our county is not only inundated by illegals, we're just outright invaded and taken over. And it's not illegals that are, you know, teaching in universities. It's not illegals that are inventing things. No, it's people that are lowering our wages and just totally sucking our government services dry. In our county hospital, 9 out of every 10 babies for years has been born to illegals. I mean, you would think that we are, you know, some sort of, you know, ocean deep sea port with all the anchor babies around here, you know, everywhere you go. and you looked at our crime rates, 90% of all drunk drivers in our county, illegal aliens. You look at the gang activity in our county, 70% of it, children of illegal aliens. So we do have some issues. And the good doctor was right. And you guys were right when you said, when the illegals come over and the corrupt President Obama justifies their law breaking, it fills a spot that could have been taken, like somebody like Dr. Farah. And I see this. But rather than, you know, have our country benefit from a great brain migration here, we actually deny geniuses the right to come to the United States in favor of unskilled, unthinking, law-breaking illegal aliens.
Yes.
And I see it firsthand, fellas. And I'm here to tell you, it's the very fabric of our country is being changed by illegal immigration, and it terrifies the hell out of me. So,
yeah, well, you're on the front lines out there in California for sure. I mean,
our eyes on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a more serious issue than we have in the Midwest, even though we do see a lot of illegal immigration. It can't even compare to the numbers here in California.
I got bad news for you. 20, 25, maybe 30 years ago, where I'm at was a lot like where you're at, except we have better weather, okay? It's coming. It's coming.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt.
Well, that's the mainstay of the United States, is that what happens in, like, California and New York starts there and usually pushes its way out to the rest of the states and cities, you know?
California is always
the trendsetter. It's bad. It's bad.
Yeah,
these folks,
horrible.
They are not coming here to be Americans like the Cubans did, like the Irish, like the Italians. They're not coming here to be Americans.
Right, Dr. Farag, who is proud to be an American now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, the illegals aren't coming here to be Americans. They're here to suck our benefits dry, take our jobs, and laugh in our faces. Because that's exactly what they're doing. If you're an illegal alien and you drive drunk and you get busted here in California, all right, they'll put you in jail. They'll realize you're an illegal without a driver's license, nothing you can do, and you're going to be out of jail the next day. They're not even going to come after you.
Nope.
If you're a citizen of the United States and you got a .08 or .09, they're going to crucify you.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost you about $4,000 to $6,000 to get your license back.
Yep.
And then you got to pay exorbitant insurance for the rest of your days. How is
it's not about individual liberties and freedoms in our country anymore. It's about businesses, like big business, like insurance companies, oil companies, energy companies. These people are controlling everything. That's why I call it a perverse oligarchy, because it's mostly businessmen running the show with their proxies in place in the Congress and in the government structures.
Oh, yeah, and the biggest proxy of all time, the Clinton family, Bill Clinton. I worked for Bill Clinton in 92. And, you know, back in 92, the corporate elite were with the Republicans, and the resistance was with the Democrats, okay? That's how it was to everybody. Bill Clinton runs, and he sold the working class out to corporate interest every chance he got. NAFTA, GATT, WTO, MFN for China. And then his wife, disgraces the United States because that family is so power mad, becomes Secretary of State and rents her authority and powers out to the highest bidder. And, of course, we all know her husband rented the Lincoln bedroom out. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous what this family did.
You bring up all that, and that's the first year that I was voting and taking a real serious look into politics was back in 92. I'm going to say I did not vote for Clinton. I did not like him then. But when you put all those things you just said about how evil Clinton was, the one thing most people don't even realize about Clinton that's worse than all those combined was when he signed on to the 98 Rome Accords, which pretty much, if he can get a Congress at any point to ratify this treaty and this deal with the UN, we lose all sovereignty of our nation. And people don't even realize that's something that happened, the Rome Accords. That was the worst of the worst.
Even with NAFTA, we got that. Even with NAFTA, we have that. We have foreign entities with powers over our judiciary and trade. Foreign entities with the NAFTA treaty. And with every AFTA, CAFTA, NAFTA, PACT,
as long as that foreign entity is big money and big business, it's going to control us. And that's the problem with our political situation right now in this country. And now, you know, I mean, I think Donald Trump's not a politician, but at the same time, when you look at the people he's putting in place, world bankers, just the same globalist wolves of Wall Street that were in there and that are still in the structure of everything, it makes me nervous that it's no change at all. Unless he's going to be like another Reagan. Reagan was a guy who put a lot of people in power in his cabinet that were Washington elite, big business elites, and he tried to make some changes. He got shot, didn't die, changed his whole outlook, and his advisor and his cabinet told him this is how it's going to be. Hopefully.
How many times can you dodge a bullet, Mr. Reagan?
Yeah,
how many
you got
times?
Lucky, Dutch, but it's not going to happen all the time. This ain't the movies. But he did make some serious changes, Reagan. And I think Donald Trump wants to make changes, but at the same time, I honestly do not think for a minute with the cabinet and the administration he's putting around him, it's not going to happen.
Well, you know, fellas, this time we won one for the Gipper. I'll go back to Reagan on that. We elected a man. We elected the first man in, well, probably since Woodrow Wilson that couldn't be bought. Trump cannot be bought. And I think we do have a chance. Now, I see who Trump's bringing in. I do. And here is something I also notice, okay? Usually the best way to catch a thief is with a better thief. Usually the best way to reform something, you know, to reform evil is to find a few devils that know everything. And I think that's what Trump is doing. At least I really hope so. But to be honest with you, even if it's going to be more of the same on a lot of accords, if Trump keeps merely half of his promises with respect to illegal immigration and trade, we're all going to be worth twice as much in 2 years. Our standard of living is going to go right through the roof if he does half the shit he said he'd do. Just half.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
Why he won,
I mean,
you know. My question is, how ridiculous is this?
Hey, Mom, you know what that means?
What's
it's
that mean?
The macho moment.
Be a macho, macho man. All right, go ahead, man.
And that's how we shut up the ape, and we drop in the Macho Man Minute. And this week, our lucky listeners, see if we can get this to work the way I want it to work.
Where's that Macho Minute? Ooh, yeah.
No, we got a. My computer may or may not do it. I've been prepared. It's just giving me one of them little spinning circle things.
Well,
it's probably going to open like six times.
Well, I hate that we interrupted A-Bomb's rant when we didn't have our video queued.
A-Bomb isn't allowed to just come in and take over my show like he said he was going to. A-Bomb's awesome. If you guys haven't went and listened to the Fallout Shelter.
Great show, by the way, yesterday, man. That was... poor Joe Will. Oh, you guys just shredded that guy. Are you with us?
I think he just put down the...
Rock, we are less than a week away.
Oh, I'm here.
Challenges of your career.
I'm here.
Competing for the WWF title in a match you've never competed in before. A Hell in a Cell match where you and five other men.
Rocky. Show them your bronies.
Oh, I'm still here, boys. I'm still here.
Finally, The Rock has come back to New Jersey. Just as sure as for the very first time.
And it just,
I see a picture of The Rock and it's over.
Yeah.
It's just over.
It was just, it couldn't.
A-Bomb, are you still with us?
Couldn't handle it.
Oh, yeah, fellas. Oh, I'm still here. I just put my phone on mute so I didn't interrupt you.
What do we got left? Four minutes or something?
We got about 3 minutes left.
Yep.
It's been a pretty good show. We got A-Bomb online with us to close out the show with us. We had a great interview and discussion with Dr. Tariq Farag, who is a nuclear engineer and a very knowledgeable and educated man on Islam and the dangers of immigration in Islam. And a threat to any society, because when it comes down to it, you know, are you ready for war? Because they're coming and taking over slowly pieces of our culture.
Rose being black, stars being black, being robbed, the list goes on and on. And thank you to our fire to a buffer, our buffer stop tonight.
Yeah.
Under fire.
These guys are great. We get to them, man. Shout out. Thank you for that.
And A-Bomb, if you hear any songs that we're playing that you like and you want to for your show, you know, just let us know, right?
Hey, man. Whatever you guys come up with, I'm good.
Well, I appreciate you calling today, Mama. Really, 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 really.